Well, good afternoon, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. It's January, February, March, April. It's April 8th today, 2023.
What day is it?
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. It doesn't make any difference. And my wife, whose job is to take care of me today and make sure that I do everything right and don't get in any trouble, she happens to have a microphone on, so...
Watch out.
Just watch out. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question, a car problem, a car argument with your brother, your mother, your sister, your aunt, your uncle, and you want somebody to settle it, then the two of us will settle it one way or the other. We've been in the car repair business together since 1979. We got married before that. You worked at the bank. Mm-hmm. I was a policeman. And in 1979, we opened up our first repair shop, which happened to be a mobile gas station in Ahwatukee. And then we morphed into where we're at today. Today, when you go to our shop, you might walk in the front counter and be dealt with by a young lady. And that's our daughter, Andy. She spent her entire life in the shop. And so she actually runs the shop. She's the CEO, CFO. And her biggest problem is her older brother, who's handling the shop itself. But between the two of them, they do a good job.
They do.
They make
that's
it
true.
A good package. Andy's kind of like my mom, real focused and stuff. And I asked her not too long ago, you know, what's it like when you meet the muscular guy on the other side of the counter? And you say, you know, what can I do? She says, they oftentimes talk really, you know, well, it's got a check engine light, and then it's got a code 32, and this is what I've done. And I said, so what do you do during that period of time? And she says, I write down everything they say. Mm-hmm. And I says, how often are they right about the direction of travel and the direction of diagnosis and the ultimate repair? And she said, well, that's where the service writer comes in, because the service writer, we write down what the customer says and on the remarks section of the work order in plain view of everybody, and then the service writer writes down what the technician did to fix the car. I said, how often do they match? And she goes, almost never. And there's nothing that we're trying to create a problem. It's just that the diagnostic process is quite different for us than it is for them. You run into the same thing on the front counter?
Yes, or they look over at you and they are eyeing the men that are sitting behind you that they think they want to talk to rather than talking to near Andy.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about like the service writers and stuff like that?
Yes.
Okay, because there's other men and other women inside there.
Yeah.
But it is a difficult thing, but they don't understand 79, 80, 20, 23. We've been working on the car repair business together for 43 years.
Yes.
And I would imagine you've hundred hundreds of thousands, if not a million, phone calls.
Oh yes.
And it's for me it's the same way though, because on the radio and I've been doing radio since 1988 in the Valley, the radio is really symptoms. Let's
right.
talk symptoms. We've got a friend of ours that's got a Ford truck, a diesel truck, and he's been working on it now since he was 10 years old, trying to get it fixed.
Yeah.
And so he's gonna take it to Nate, Strictly Diesel, a good guy who knows diesels like nobody else up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And I said to him, don't tell him that you read something in Google, and don't tell him what didn't work, and don't tell him what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just give him the keys and tell him what the symptoms are. That's
yes.
all I want you to do. He goes, why? He needs that. And I said, no, he doesn't need that, and he doesn't want that. Just the symptoms. Just the symptoms. How many times has someone come in and told us to balance their tires?
A lot.
And then they come back and say, you didn't do a good job.
Yeah.
And then we go drive it and we find out it's not a balanced tire at all. It's an engine miss or it's something else.
Yeah. And we usually say, why do you want your tires balanced? But sometimes if they just say it, we'll just do it and then find out that that wasn't what it was, like you say.
But we didn't really know that we were trying to fix anything.
Right.
We thought it was just a customer ask. So a customer says, change the oil and rotate the tires. That's what we do.
Sure.
Okay, there's no upsell at that point. There shouldn't be any upsell. You can't really, well, you need a transmission service based on your miles. You don't know that until you say, have you ever had a transmission service? But in reality, why don't you wait until the oil change is done? Because the technician's job is just to change the oil and the filter. What else does he have to do?
just a general check over the tires and the belts and the hoses and
all the fluids.
All the fluids.
And everything underneath the car he can see. Mm-hmm. So if he sees any kind of weeping and seeping in any oil situation or any oil hose or oil fitting, he's to mention that.
Right.
And this is the opportunity for us to do a 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 mile inspection of your car to let you know what you might be faced with down the road.
Yes.
It's not really, it's unlike the minority of the shops in town, it's not where it's an opportunity for you to take that $55, $65, $75 oil change and blow it up to $3,000 worth of stuff you need.
Yes.
And the most important question that you ask them when you're at the front counter and stuff, when they're talking about stuff, is I heard Annie say it the other day, tell me about the symptoms. Tell me about the symptoms.
Yes.
And I think she was talking, there was an oil leak, and he wanted the oil lines changed. But in reality, that vehicle didn't have any oil lines.
Yeah.
So somewhere along the line, he had got on Google and figured out, or somebody said that it's probably the oil lines that are leaking. Mm-hmm. If it was transmission fluid, there are lines that do leak in transmissions, but not oil. And oil is color.
Oh, kind of a brownish color. Golden.
Brown to black.
Yeah.
And transmission fluid is?
Red.
Or pink, mm-hmm. Yeah. And coolant is?
Usually green, but sometimes now we have orange and a couple other colors.
Yeah,
too,
we do.
So
all the fluids have a different color,
right,
most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you touch it or you put it on a paper towel and you bring us the paper towel, we can quickly tell you what it is.
Yeah.
And nobody does that but ladies. The guys will never do that.
Okay.
Oh, it's got a power steering leak. Okay. Anyway, we've got a caller, and who might that be, Gil?
Say good morning to Buddy.
Buddy, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question for you.
Okay.
Or a suggestion. I have a friend who has a 2006 Pontiac Grand Prix GT, and she's sending it back to Minnesota for the summer, and she's going to go along with it. And she wants to take the car to someone, a shop that will just check it over, check the fluids, just make sure there's nothing, you know, visibly wrong with the car. She hasn't had any trouble with it, but, you know, just for safety's sake, she just wants to have it checked over. Do you have a shop that you could recommend for her to go to?
Tell me a geographical area of the valley, and yes, I can.
She's in Scottsdale and around Shea and 96th Street.
Okay. We could send them to Blackwell at 40th and Greenway.
Mm-hmm.
That's
hold on just a second. Let me write that down.
Okay.
And I was 40th. Thinking of Bell Isles.
And Greenway. 40th Greenway. And Greenway is Blackwell Automotive. And then
I'm writing fast.
Okay. And
Blackwell
Automotive. And then south at the 101 in McDowell is Bell Automotive.
Oh, I know that.
And Bell has been around since Jesus was a baby. I think they're the second or third generation of youngsters running the grandma and grandpa's and dad's businesses. Mm-hmm. And both of them...
Well, that's a recommendation.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to tell you to go to somebody that I don't personally know and have their cell phone in my cell phone and that we don't talk regularly. You have to understand the risk associated with me giving out the name of a bad shop. It's usually I'm in really big trouble. So, and it turns into big lawsuit, and all of a sudden they're subpoenaing the radio show tapes and all that other kind of stuff. So, no, I take that seriously. So Bell Automotive to the south and Blackwell Automotive to the northwest, and those are the two good shops I would recommend.
And Bell, yeah, Bell was 101 in McDowell.
Yes, and it's just west of the 101 on the north side of the street. The 101 is like 88th Street, and I think they're like 86th Street, 8600 East McDowell or something like that.
McDowell. Okay. Thank you very much. I enjoy listening to your show.
Okay.
And this is the first time I had a question for you.
Okay, let me just make a suggestion to you.
Sure.
I think the conversation should sound similar to what you said. I'm getting ready to take a trip. I would like you to check all my fluids, all my belts, all my hoses, all my tires, because those are the areas. You don't care about the heater and the air conditioning. You already know if that works or not. You don't want them to check the headlights, aim, and you don't want any of that other stuff going on. Just fluids, belts, hoses, tire inflation, thank you, And I'm taking a trip, so it's a trip check, so to speak. And so let's define the square box so that we don't go crazy. They hand them an estimate for, neither one of the shops will do that I told you, but shops oftentimes will give them an estimate for $125 or a sheet for $125 that says, here's a list of the things that you need to have fixed. And the list is $8,000 worth of work, and it's 22 different items. And that's not what she's looking for.
Absolutely.
So. All right.
And, well, again, thank you again.
Oh, you know what? Hold on. My wife is sitting here next to me. Scottsdale and Lincoln is Bridwell Automotive. Scottsdale and Lincoln, Bridwell Automotive. Well, I forgot all about them.
Yeah,
Bridwell Automotive.
Closer, I think.
And that's closer than Bell. And Bridwell Automotive, Bill Bridwell is a friend of mine. He knew Jesus Christ. That's how old he is. And he's been in the automobile repair business since when cars first came out. And his two boys now run that operation. So you're not going to talk to no spring chickens at that place, but you're going to talk to people who have hundreds of years of experience in car repair.
Okay.
And I got
all three down.
Yeah, I think they're the only gas station that still pumps your gas for you.
I think so. Last time I talked to them, they had a gas station, and they still had a full-service island. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
All righty, well, thank you very much, buddy. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Anybody in the wings? Gil?
Yes, we have Bob.
Bob, can I help you today, Bob?
Yes, you can. I've got a vehicle, and it's got two outlets. One is for a cell phone or something like that. The other one looks like the old cigarette lighter, and it's got 12 on the cap that it's got 12 volt, and then it's got 120 watt. It's got 120 W, I presume that's watts.
Okay.
What can I run off of that?
Anything you want.
Doesn't sound like much power.
Anything that plugs into a cigarette lighter connection will work there. Because the connection, the female part of it and the male part of it, they usually have a fuse, and anything that you can plug into the cigarette lighter. Now, you can also take, and they have a cigarette lighter thing you plug in, and then it has a USB port for your phone. And so it's going to drop the voltage from 12 to 5.
Yeah. An air pump to pump up the tires and stuff like that. Really what I'm talking about is I haul some people, and they've got a machine that produces oxygen for them, and you plug that thing in there when their battery runs low. And I don't know what it's drawn on wattage or anything like that, but I was concerned about overloading it.
Okay. I can help you with that. I'm quite sure that the cigarette lighter's probably got a 15 or a 20-amp fuse on it. We're going to go to amps instead of watts. Okay, so everything in your car is an amp. So your headlights are going to draw 15 amps. Your starter is going to draw anywhere from 80 to 100 amps. And so when you blow up all your lights on the car, maybe you're going to draw 15 amps. So it's not really a lot. Here's the bad news is, the good news is this. You plug it into the cigarette lighter, and everything should be fine. If it's got a 12-volt, then almost always the 12-volt plug, the bullet that goes into the cavern, is set for the same voltage that the car has, because the only place a cigarette lighter appears is in a car. I'm betting it's a 20 amp circuit, 15 or 20 amp circuit on that. The worst that's going to happen is you're going to pop that fuse. That's the worst that's going to happen. And so then you'll go to your fuse panel, you'll take the cover off, you'll look, and it'll say cigarette lighter number 21, and you look at, and it's yellow, and you pull it out, and you look at it, and it's burnt. And you look at the cap, there's another yellow one there that's brand new, and you plug it back in. But you could also, if this was going to be an ongoing thing, you could also have somebody, like a repair shop, wire up a second circuit and bring it into the cab of the car and put a 20 amp or a 30 amp circuit on that if this thing has that much capability. But if it's, we've plugged in some major stuff in our motorhome dashboard, mm-hmm. and we've never popped the fuse.
No, I don't think so.
And it's going to be no different than that. So I don't know that I'd worry. You're not going to have a fire. The worst that's going to happen is you're going to pop the cigarette lighter fuse.
Okay, not going to blow up any electronics or anything.
I promise you, that's not the case. It's not the case.
Okay. Relief. I went to the owner's manual, and I wasn't getting much information out of them on that. So
okay.
Anyway, and the 120 watts didn't seem like I don't know what they're trying to tell us with that, but it, anyway.
Yeah. I want to tell you something. We've plugged in air pumps and cigarette lighters on our motorhome to pump up a tire on our motorcycle. So, I mean, yeah. And that's a much bigger demand than pumping air into somebody's lungs, because we're putting 65 yeah. pounds of pressure in the motorcycle yeah. tire. Yeah. So, no, I you know, the worst that's going to happen is you're going to pop the fuse. The worst, and under the best condition, you have plan B. and really what plan B is go buy a doggone 12 volt battery and hook up his generator to the 12 volt battery and you're done. Because his generator's going to have a fuse too. But I just can't do the conversion of watts to amps right now, but I'm talking about 20 amp. The starters, everything in your car is between 20 and 30 amp draw, except the starter's 180 or 200.
Okay.
So we're talking, you're way, way under that. Anyway, thank you very much, Bob. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. A couple of things. My wife just reminded me that at the first time I said the starter drew 80 to 100 amps, and then the second time I said 180 to 200. And in the meantime, my head and my computer is spinning because I'm trying to thinking, can I convert his watts to amps? And then we're talking about voltage. And so the answer is it's probably 100 to 200 amps on a starter, depending on if it's cranking over that the cranking system is cranking over a four-cylinder, you know, VW motor or some big diesel motor or something like that. But on most cars and trucks, we're looking for an amp draw when it's cranking over. So if it cranks over and it hardly moves and it's got 400 amps, mm-hmm. then the battery's good because it's got 400 amps, but the starter's not.
Okay.
So those are the kinds of things. But thank you for cleaning that up. Action Auto Repair is a good shop. He's at I-17 and Deer Valley Road. I've known Tom for many, many years. We've been friends, and I admire him because, like most of the shops on my list, we all know cars very well. So it's not likely some snot-nosed technician that I hired day before yesterday is going to walk into my office and tell me which way the cow ate the cabbage. And because of that, we have a mutual respect for one another. And so it's not like that the technicians in the shop are dictating what's said on the front counter. That's where the problem typically lies, is when the technician, they tell the service writer, he needs this, 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 and this, and the service writer goes and tells you, you need this, 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 and this, and then you don't really know why, and if you ask why, they don't know why, it's just the technician looking at your car. What you don't have at that point is your owner's manual to see that he wants you to flush your cooling system at 30, but your manual calls for a 100,000-mile service or a 50,000-mile service or a 60,000-mile service. You just don't have that. So in that particular case, no matter whose shop you're at, then if they have a recommendation, have them write it down on the ticket, write what you need and the price. And then that way you can look up and see if your owner's manual agrees with their analysis of your problem.
And you know what's funny is I got something. We haven't gotten a new car for a while, obviously, years. And so we just got one. And they've already started telling me that it's almost time for my service and I have like 2,000 miles on the car or whatever. And they also said, and when you come in, we'll give you a maintenance schedule. And I'm thinking, well, that's interesting because it's right in my owner's manual. So what? It's going to be interesting to see what kind of maintenance schedule they give me if it matches what the dealer.
Do you want to bet?
Yeah, no, because I know what's going to happen.
Okay, you bought a new Jeep.
Yes.
And actually, we bought one of those new Gladiators
mm-hmm.
That we're going to tow behind the motorhome when we travel.
Right.
And, folks, the reason why we bought the new Gladiator had to do with that Renee needs stuff to cover, buy junk, and bring it back to Phoenix. And then from Phoenix...
Treasures.
And
yes.
Then it goes to Payson to the workshop where all the elves work. They're mm-hmm. all named Mark. And from there, it goes from there to a place called Fancy Finds in Pace or in Pine where her boutique stuff is sold.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that Jeep Renegade Rubicon, no, the Jeep Gladiator Rubicon, got to mm-hmm. get it all right.
Mm-hmm.
It has a bed, but what's nifty is the tailgate and the cover lock mm-hmm. when you lock the truck.
Yes.
So you can put your treasures inside there and lock it up.
Right.
But it also has four doors and the back seats fold down, which gives you more room for your treasures.
I was thinking, you know,
most of the time
this,
I call her junk, but I'm calling it treasures right now for just self-preservation.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you're right, you're already getting paraphernalia from the dealership of one we love,
mm-hmm.
but out here, they're talking about, we think you should follow this, and the owner's manual is going to be completely different, and the folks have a tough time trying to decide.
Right.
I suggest that the person that made the owner's manual and made your car knows more about when it needs to have an oil change and when it needs to have this done and this done and this done than anybody else.
Right.
And, yeah. and so that's why the default is, and they're going to say, well, wait a minute, you're in Arizona. And they say, well, why don't you order me an Arizona owner's manual? Mm. There is no such thing.
Right.
There's not one for Montana. There's not one for Idaho, for the real cold places, Alaska. Mm. And there's not one for Arizona and the I-10 corridor. There's just not there.
Right.
So stick to the one in your glove box and you'll be fine. We got a caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Alan.
Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing today?
Thank you very much. Yes, I'm doing fine. My wife is... said she loved me this morning, so I think I'm on tall cotton, buddy.
Hey, can't knock that.
Yep.
I got a question, but I got a Dodge Dakota. It's a 2004.
Okay.
And I got a check engine light comes on, and I took it and analyzed it, and they told me I've got a bad catalytic converter. Well, then it went off. And then for about 2 months, then it comes back on again.
Okay. Okay.
Let me
tell you that the code doesn't tell you you have a catalytic converter problem. The code is labeled catalytic converter because the computer can only guess. So what has to happen is we have to perform some tests to verify the cat is working or not working. If you want to know if your catalytic converter, and let me ask you a question. Is your car driven as if it was owned by Grandma Moses and goes to the store every once in a while but hasn't been on the freeway at 70 or 80 miles an hour, maybe only once a month or once every couple months? Is it driven kind of most around town? Okay. All right. All right, let me tell you this. Not too long ago, a guy called me and he said he had an old Chrysler and he said he had a $2,300 estimate for the entire exhaust system on his old Chrysler. And he asked me if I thought that was fair, and I said, no, I don't think it's fair. Where do you live? And he said, I live in East Mesa. And I says, I want you to go to Mesa Muffler. It's a shop I've been dealing with since 1968. They're on their third generation of kids that went from daddy or grandpa to daddy to now kids. And he calls me back and he says, you're not going to believe this. I had an estimate of $2,300 and they did the entire system for $750. The entire system. So I think what needs to happen is, and Mesa Muffler is capable of determining if your catalytic converter is bad. If it's bad, they'll give you a price for a new one, and they can install it right then and right there. But there's a strong possibility that you just need to have your grandson take that thing out on the highway at least once a month and just give it a whirl. Or something like that. Because it's not uncommon for us, and we have lots of senior citizens as customers of ours that don't drive a lot. We're right across the street from Ahwatukee and Mountain Park Ranch, and we've got lots of those kinds of cars. And sometimes we just put one of our drivers in it and said, put it in third gear and drive it down the freeway 10 miles and turn around and come back. And that buys us a whole lot of time. We're kind of cleaning up the exhaust while we do that because Grandma Moses isn't doing that herself. Does that make sense?
Gotcha.
Okay.
It sure does.
All righty. Well, listen, Alan, thank you very much. Mesa Muffler is the place I would suggest you make an appointment and have them look at your catalytic converter and tell them you did have a code for that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem here. My wife is here. We've been in business together working on cars and handling the paperwork and dealing with the telephone since 1979. So Renee has quite good skills on the telephone. But in reality, a lot of times those phone calls are just an exchange of information. Guys don't answer questions real well. They only want to tell you things. Okay. Women are much better, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Women are much better. Does this vibration shake the seat of your pants or the steering wheel? And the guys won't tell you because they don't know. Or they do tell you, or they'll say, oh, no, it's a drive shaft. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't ask you that. Is this the seat of your pants, or is this the steering wheel? And folks, the reason why is the seat of your pants is the back of the car, and the steering wheel is the front of your car. And I'm asking you where the vibration's coming from. That's why we have that conversation.
Yes.
All righty. Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil was around when Barney Fife was working on cars. Barney Rubble was his assistant. And when automatic transmissions first came out, Phil was a part of that group that had to work on those things that we all hated. But today, he's a premier transmission repair, replacement, rebuilding company. And he's been around in Phoenix since 1968. 40th Street in Washington, it's called Automatic Transmission Exchange. It's a good guy, and he's a good transmission shop. Let's go to the phones, and let me see. I have the wrong paper in front of me. We're going to go to Spencer. Spencer, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Sitting here looking at my manual as far as oil change schedule, and it's got me doing an oil change at 5,000, 75, 10,000, 15. It seems like all the time, 15,000, 20, 22, 25, 30. I mean, the specs of synthetic oil, if it's 10,000, I know you're a big proponent of following the manual for schedule and service and stuff, but it seems kind of contradictory
Your manual is. Are you in the manual? And forgive me, uh-huh. But in the manual it'll say miles or months. I want you to go by miles.
Right.
Okay. So it shows an oil change with a synthetic oil, but there's no rhyme or reason for the mileage intervals 5, 15, 25, anything like that.
Uh-huh. Okay. No rhyme or reason. It's just it doesn't say synthetic. It just says oil change.
Okay. What does it tell you? What kind of weight you should be using?
0-20.
Okay. Well, that's a synthetic.
Yeah, that's a full synthetic.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a full dog.
So they're, like I said, they're wanting 5,000, 75, 10, 15, 20,
okay, but 5,075. Well, stop for a minute. I'm not doubting your word, but you're saying 25, it's 5 to 7,500, and then the next one was 10, and then the next one was 15. And so there's a wide variation of mileage in between those stopping points that you've got. What kind of car is it?
2021 Nissan Versa.
Okay. Yeah, I am a certified expert in oil, and if I were you, I might do that first oil change at 5, just because you're going to shed some metal at 5, the first 5,000 miles, especially if you let your kid take it on a date. So you're going to rev that motor up, and you're going to shed some metal, so let's change it at 5, and after that you can go 10 to 15,000. It's up to you. I don't know that I'd go longer than 15,000 in a year's period of time. But it's kind of like 1 year of 15,000 miles. That's kind of, and if you feel better at 10, then do 10. But don't do 3 and don't do 5 and don't do 7,500 if you're going to put a 0-20 in it. The oil will last longer than that. That's all.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I agree with you on that. You've always said that. But then on the other hand, you always say follow your schedule on your with the manual.
So. Yeah, that's
you
really
caught me with my pants down.
Yeah, we're going to have to look into that
because
that's really weird. And that's not a printed thing that the dealer gave you. That's actually the book that came with the vehicle.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
We've never heard that before. Mm-mm. And frankly, what we do at our shop, and a lot of guys, other guys do too, is they'll actually take the owner's manual out of the car when the customer comes, then they'll open up the owner's manual, and we'll go over it with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll dog-ear the page for the oil changes and stuff. I'd be interested, not right now, but I'd be interested in knowing what the fluid changes are based on that manual for coolant and transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Coolant and transmission. And if they have brake. So if you would look at that and then call me back, I'd like
one
that.
Minute.
We got until noon.
And, or even email you.
Or you could email me that, and I'll get your email while I'm on the air and stuff like that. But I'd be interested in what your Nissan manual says for the three fluids, coolant, transmission, and brake, and see what they say. Because they're likely to all be
different. Okay, put me on hold, and I'll get your email.
I'll just tell you right now, mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at marksalem.com. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Jerry, I'm going to squeeze you in. How can I help you today?
Terry.
I'm sorry.
He can't read his own writing.
I got a 2003 Ford Expedition with 270,000 miles on it. It's when I get it hot, get it up to around 60 or so, maybe a little higher. Well, sometimes even lower, but most pronounced at high speed. I get a hesitation. Feels like a misfire or something. I have no code. I cleaned out the mass airflow sensor, and I changed the fuel filter. I'm wondering what else could it be.
It could be a lean condition because what I hear you saying is that it's related to speed and throttle. And so when you're doing 60, 70 miles an hour, you're using and you're pushing a whole lot more fuel forward, and the motor's consuming a lot more fuel. And so I would think that that would have something to do with a lean condition. A fuel filter, low fuel pressure. Now, let me ask you, if you tromp that big dog to the floor, does it get up and take off?
No, not really. It'll hesitate.
It'll fall on its face.
If you mean from 70 and like I try to accelerate and go around somebody really quick,
It'll
definitely hesitate.
Okay, I'm thinking fuel pressure. That's the first thing that I'd want to do is I'd want to hang a fuel gauge on there and bring it up underneath the hood and tape it to the windshield and watch the fuel pressure as I drove it. If you have a repair shop, call them and ask them if you can rent their gauge for a day or two. Well, I mean, shops do that all the time,
cool.
Especially for customers that they have in their files and stuff. So, you know, plug it in, tape it to the dash, tell them you'll be responsible so nobody will steal it. Don't leave it there. Open the hood, drop it down and shut the hood and stuff like that when you're going to work and stuff. But that's what I'd be looking at is fuel pressure because the demand is higher with RPMs than speed, and you're talking about a problem that is RPM and speed caused, and I think it's fuel. All righty?
So bottom line is... One more question. Bottom line is then fuel pumps don't go completely bad all at once. They can go bad a little bit at a time.
No. 95% of them will fail, will just drop below the threshold, and a lot of times the motor won't start. I'm talking about a 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 fuel pumps. But more than likely, the decline of fuel pressure is more related to the fuel filter. So if I took the fuel filter off and I was working on your car, I'd take the old one off and I'd shake all the out of it and I'd put my lips on the inlet side of it and I'd blow as hard as I could. And if it felt like it was Louis Armstrong blowing a trumpet, remember when his cheeks got really big? And I had a hard time blowing through it. I'd have the new one in my other hand and I'd put it up to my lips and I'd blow through it and it'd go, and then I'd say, it's plugged, and I'd be done. So you could do the same thing.
Cool.
Alrighty, Terry, thank you very much. Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines open and we'll be right back. Well, folks, there's lots of car shops in town that I like, and Auto Dynamics is one of them. I've known Chuck, and he owns Auto Dynamics in Sun City, and I've known him since the late 60s and early 70s. He was a gas station guy, and I was working for his best friend. And so I got to meet him and was around him. Back then in the old days, the gas station guys were a little ornery. They were just a little ornery, but there was a whole lot of what they called honkahides. And in the vernacular of gas station, a honkahide was a guy that would poke a hole in your tire on the freeway when you stopped and got gas so he could sell you a tire, and he honked your hide. Your tire is called a hide. Chuck hated that moniker, and he hated that idea that people thought of him as somebody who would rip him off. But Sun City's got a good shop. It's north of Grand Avenue, west of 99th Avenue, and it's called Auto Dynamics. And if you live in that area, it's a great place to go. The phones, we're going to go to Bob. Bob, good morning.
Morning, Mark. You know, on that caller with the late model Versa,
uh-huh.
Wouldn't he just go by the Oil Life monitor for his oil change?
You could. And Renee said that, and she picked up on that, yeah, too. She said, doesn't he have an oil? And you're right. Here's the one thing about the oil monitor. The computer is keeping track of the environment your engine is running, how cold the ambient temperature is, how hot the ambient temperature is, how hot you get the motor, how cold you get the motor. It also monitors humidity coming into the mouth of the motor, whether it's a cold day with lots of water in the air or it's a hot day with no water in the air. So that, all of that is taken into consideration with the Oil Life monitor. But you're exactly right. The default is go by the oil change monitor. and the light that comes on is yellow. It means you don't have to stop and get an oil change that minute or that hour or even that week. And then just make sure the shop resets your light when you go in for an oil change. But you bring up a good point. The oil life monitor should help them out.
I got one other quick question.
Okay.
On a 2014 GMC Sierra, my son took it in for a transmission service recently. Mm-hmm. And I guess they scanned the codes. And then they said he had a misfire, cylinder 4 misfire code. But he wasn't getting any check engine light. So at what point do you get a check engine light then if you have a misfire?
All the cars are different, but there has to be some kind of a log. So if we get a flash of a misfire on number 4, the computer's going to look for that repetitiously. If it doesn't see it after, now I'm just exaggerating here, 20,267 million cycles of the engine, it's going to throw that out and start all over. It's not uncommon for it to have these kinds of codes, although of all the engine codes we deal with, 99 of them are hard codes where the light's on and stays on, and the other 1% is that intermittent thing. If he wanted to do something cool, then have him take number 4 spark plug out and put it in number 3 and put number 3 in number 4 and see if the code goes to the cylinder, the other cylinder, and if it does, he has a bad spark plug or a wire or something like that. So he could do that to kind of test the veracity of the entire check engine system.
Thanks.
Okay, good luck. Thank you. Chris, you're up next. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I'm getting ready to change the plugs and spark plug wires on a 5.3. Do you recommend changing out the ignition coil or anything?
I don't even recommend the wires unless you need to. I want to tell you something. That's just not high on my list of stuff that we sell at the shop. And a lot of times, if there's one wire that's bad, you just buy one wire and put it back on. I don't believe that it's in now, there's going to be a lot of shop owners that are going to disagree with me, and that's okay. But there's going to be a lot of them that agree with me. Spark plug wires is just not on the list of things I need to be worrying about. If there's a valve cover leak, it's going to leak oil, it's going to disintegrate the wire, and it's going to have a misfire on that wire. Heck, why don't you fix the valve cover leak, and then let's just put one wire on it. And so why do we need to put a whole set of wires on it that could easily cost $200? So in your particular case, I would get spark plugs, I'd make sure they gapped them right, and I'd use a little dielectric grease in the boot, and I'd be done with it.
Right. What about ignition coils?
No.
Would that cause a miss? Or?
Well, the ignition coils can cause...
You wouldn't recommend changing those out?
No, not at all. No. Let me change your question. Mark, do you make it a practice to change wires at a particular miles? No, I don't. Not on my cars, not on my customers' cars. We do as we need to. Mark, how about ignition coils? Same answer. How many ignition coils do you do? We probably do one or two a month. Would you do them all? If it's a four-cylinder, do you all do all four at one time? No, we just do the bad one. That's all. Just do the bad one. Why would we do all of them? One tire's bad, and we're going to replace all three of them, all four of them? No, we're not.
Well, some cars you have to, but...
Sometimes if they don't rotate them and all that...
Oh, well, yeah. Or if they're the specific size that you have to have, I forget what that's called, but you have to have the same size on every tire?
Yes.
Yes,
yes.
Okay.
But we can get the same size.
Okay.
We can get the same tire.
Right.
We could change just one. But
okay.
But you're right. There are certain conditions that it makes it difficult, and you have to do all of them. But you don't have to do all the fan belts at once.
No.
And you don't have to do all the coils at once. You don't have to do all the plugs at once. I mean, you could do
whatever. Does he have a miss?
Yeah. Is this because you have a miss, Chris?
Yeah. And like you said, it probably could be a wire.
Okay. But a plug misfire is altogether different. It's not a real common issue that the plug is blamed for an ignition misfire. But if you wanted to do it, you could do this. You could do this. Why don't you swap the coil with the one next to it and flip the two of them? Why don't you do that? And see if the problem moves with the coil. Okay? So swap the two of them and see if the problem moves to the other cylinder and see what happens.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, and have a great day.
You bet, you bet. And that was Chris, and we've got David. David, you're up next. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, I've got a 2012 Ford Focus. Sometimes when I start up from a stop, it kind of shudders.
Okay.
I don't see an oil or a transmission dipstick in there, so I can't tell what's going on.
Okay. Is it always cold first thing in the morning and doesn't do it throughout the day as you use it? Or is it, is it temperature related? Is it just when it's cold and never again?
Doesn't seem to be.
Okay.
Doesn't seem to be, no.
How many miles are on it?
100,000.
Okay. A low fluid level doesn't have the symptoms that you have. The low fluid level, okay, as you turn a corner, the fluid sloshes to one side, you suck a little bit of air, you go into neutral for a second, the blink of an eye, and then you go back to load. So, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't have somebody check the transmission fluid level. I want you to manually...
It doesn't feel like it's going into neutral. It just kind of...
chugs
like that.
Okay. Can you manually shift it? Can you take control of it by pulling your shifter down into the very bottom detent, and then there's a button that's up and down that you could shift from first to second? Can you manually shift your transmission?
I'm not sure, but it doesn't last long enough to really do anything. You know, it's
okay,
and then it's okay, and I drive it around for a while, and that's okay, where I would come back again.
All right. Well, at 100,000 miles, I would be, if you wanted to guess, I would go ahead and service it. If it's never been serviced,
yeah,
and it's probably got a filter, and then you have two. We pull the pan to get what's in the pan and a filter, and then we flush the system because there's a whole lot of more fluid in the cooler and in the transmission than what comes out of the pan. So we may only do 4 quarts with the pan, yeah, but if we do a flush, the total is 10 quarts, 11 quarts, 12 quarts. So if it's two separate operations, so we pull the pan, do the filter, put it back on, then we hook up our flush machine, and then we start it up, somebody sits on it, we spin the tires, it's up on the hoist, and he goes through drive, reverse, and this and that, and he just runs it through its gears, and then the machine is pushing old out and new in, and then when you're done, you have 100% of your fluid is clean. If you wanted to do that, then I'd do that.
Okay.
Okay? All right. Thank you very much.
I'll go see you.
All righty. And we got another caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Steve.
Hi, Steve. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, folks. Good to speak with you.
Yes, sir.
Go. This morning is a general one. I've got some issues with a newer car, 2019. It has a collision avoidance system. You know, and it works pretty well. You know, you can use the smart cruise control to set the distance between you and a vehicle in front and all that kind of stuff. But what I've noticed is that this thing can cause some real problems, and I don't know if you ever dealt with it, or, you know, maybe people that are looking to buy in these cars kind of realize it, but that thing doesn't drive the way you do. And what I mean by that is,
hey, Gil, are we losing him, or is it I'm losing him?
There was a slight breakup, but you're still on the air, and he's still on the line.
Okay.
I can't hear him.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Continue on. You said it doesn't act.
Okay.
It doesn't. It what it does.
It doesn't. The collision avoidance system doesn't drive the way you do. You know, it'll stop for things that you wouldn't even think about touching the brake for.
You're absolutely
and
right.
What I mean by that. When I first bought the car, you know, I thought, wow, this is pretty slick. You know, I mean, I can, in keeping assist and the collision avoidance thing. I mean, hell, I'm an old guy. I could probably have a heart attack, and with a full tank of gas, this thing would run till it ran out of gas if I was out on the freeway.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm going through the Deck Park Tunnel one day. There's a construction truck in front of me pulling a trailer, and a piece of this plastic that they stick on the back of, you know, insulation and stuff like that. A piece of plastic blew off this thing. Now, this truck's about 50 yards ahead of me. And in the tunnel, you know, a lot of air going through. This thing is flipping over and up and around. It came down in front of my car, and I wouldn't even have thought about touching the brake, but this collision avoidance system read an object in front of me and slammed on the brakes, and I almost got rear-ended in that tunnel for something that I knew wasn't going to be a problem, but the car didn't recognize that.
You're right.
I've had that happen before because my old car had that too, and it's scary.
It was the scariest thing ever, and I took it back to the dealer and said, "Hey, you guys, can you adjust the sensitivity on this?" And they all kind of stood around looking at me like cows chewing grass, and I said, "Okay, I guess not." and then it happened to me again going up the B-line between Payson and Pine. You know, you got some pretty close rock walls there, especially when you get up around Strawberry. And it started reading, today it started reading that rock wall, and I had to turn it off. It's either on or it's off, but apparently there's no way to adjust it.
No, well,
I didn't know if you guys had, do you guys have any idea if those things can be adjusted?
They can't. They can't. But it is a constant moving target, and it's going to get better, and here's why. The car goes in and you crash. And the first thing the dealer wants is the software. We want to see the crash data. So we want to see what happened.
Sure.
And so they're going to look at this.
They want to see if it was on.
But it's not. It's self-preservation. But they're going to send it to the gurus that write the software. The problem is they can't tell the difference between a big piece of plastic and a five-year-old kid that just jumped off a bridge in front of you. They can't tell you the difference. And so we're asking this car to make decisions for us. And if you and I, Steve, were the software engineers on here, we would always err to the safe side.
Absolutely, and I understand that, but it's just, I think people buy these cars and they maybe have an unrealistic expectation or they just flat out don't know like I did.
No,
this is one of the things that can happen.
Okay, but I'm going to disagree with you because I can't tell you how many cars and how many times my customers, and I've worked for insurance companies for lots of years, and I've talked to people who the collision avoidance system saved them from a crash. So yes, what you're talking about, that piece of plywood that blows off, that piece of cardboard that the truck in front of me kicks up in front of me, you got all that going on. If you go on the internet, you'll probably figure out some way to disable the collision avoidance system by just disconnecting one of the sensors. And typically you disconnect the sensor. The system goes into limp mode and it goes into no, I'm not going to work mode and you have it light on. That's all. You could disable it. You could put that on the toggle switch if that's what you want it to do and just turn it off every time you get in or whatever. Or you're stuck with disabling it every time you get into the car. Did Alan ever disable yours?
No, he didn't. But I know exactly what he's talking about.
All right. 602-508-0960, and we'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Mark and Renee are here at your service. My wife of 475 years is sitting here next to me, and I don't know how I made it in this life without her.
I don't either. And you know some old people, Fred Flintstone, Jesus Christ. I mean, you're talking about all these people that have these friends. You are aging yourself. Yeah. Don't age me with you. Okay,
That's okay. There's only a year apart between the two of us. So it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. All right. I know your underwear's wound up tight. Give me just a second here.
About what?
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
Folks, earlier we had Spencer call in on his Versa, and he was reading off of the owner's manual that the oil change, and he gave a specific mileage stopping points, which was very confusing to us because there was no rhyme or reason. Usually they're 3,000 apart, 5,000 apart, 10,000 apart, 12,000 apart.
Mm-hmm.
So my lie detector wife looked up the Versa owner's manual and gave me one issue at a time.
Yeah, well, it just says recommends getting your oil changed every 3,000 to 5,000 for conventional.
Which is, now folks, conventional is the Fred Flintstone oil. It's the old oil. It's the oil that we all grew up on because we have a conventional, we have a semi-synthetic, which is called a blend, and then we have a full synthetic, and the full synthetic is the big dog. Conventional is usually 3,000 to 5,000 miles, and a synthetic starts at 7,500 to 15,000.
Yeah.
So there's a big difference. So go ahead and read.
Yeah, this says synthetic 75 to 10,000 miles.
Okay, so that falls within my range of what I tell people.
Right.
Around 10,000 miles, 12. Now, what do we do on our cars?
How many miles or what? Usually 75.
Okay.
For a semi-synthetic, though, but you are more because you have the diesel.
Right. I'm 12. I'm 12,000 miles on my diesel truck. Mm-hmm. So I tell them I want 12,000 miles on customers' cars and my truck at the same time because we're that way. Go ahead.
Okay. And so it says the Versa takes a 0-20. So you would think that would be 75 to 10,000 miles. And like we talked about, it's probably good to just go by your mileage.
Your maintenance interval monitor.
Right.
Maintenance monitor.
Exactly. And then they say, does Nissan recommend synthetic oil?
Okay.
Genuine Nissan synthetic oil is specifically engineered to your engine's needs and is the best product to use to get the highest performance and longest life out of your Nissan. I'm going to probably leave the room because this will wad you up, I know.
I mean to tell you, this is such bull. I'm telling you, folks, Nissan doesn't make their own oil. There's four companies that pull oil out of the ground. Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. One of them makes their oil. Mm-hmm. So they don't have a special oil.
A genuine
Nissan oil. Neither does Mercedes-Benz or Bentleys or Chevys, Ford, Dodges, Chevrolet, whatever, Buicks, motorcycles.
Harley Davidson
is my, boy, that one there just frosts me about their oil. The issue, folks, is that it's especially, you need to use, well, they're buying their oil and they're going to make money on it. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. We all make money on our oil. But to suggest that you need to use our oil in your Versa is just flat bull excrement.
Well,
that's all it is.
Isn't it that they have to buy it for you if they tell you you have to use that? I mean, they're saying that it's recommended.
Okay, and it is true. If the car manufacturer dictates that you can only use their battery, then they have to give you the battery.
Okay.
So when it's proprietary like that, their software and stuff that we still have to pay for that's in your car, and if we want another copy of it, we still have to pay for it. But the idea that everybody has their own oil, Chevy doesn't have their own oil, neither does Ford, Chrysler, Honda, Toyota, all the big dogs, it's going to be made by one of those four companies, and it's going to be put in a bottle that says Honda, Chevy, Toyota, or Versa.
Do they put any kind of little special potion in there with it, do you think?
Do you think that if you and I owned that company, do you think that we'd let Nissan tell us to put a drop of angel urine in it so to make their special oil?
No.
And we wouldn't do it anyway.
No, but they used to do that with the gas.
No, you're true.
The gas station.
That's absolutely true. Yes, sir. And Shell and Mobil and Phillips 66 and Union 76 and Exxon, they all had different gasolines. But the guys that built the gasolines at the tank farms said, well, our gasoline's different because when the tanker pulls in, it holds 9,000 gallons. And when it's Chevron, it gets 1 gallon of special camel urine.
Okay.
And that makes our special. And then you say to yourself, 5 gallons of camel urine in a 9,000 gallon load. How much did you get, Mrs. Salem, when you bought $10 worth of gas?
Yeah.
You know, I'm probably going to get in trouble for that comment.
Yeah, you probably will.
But that's okay. You know what? If we have callers, then...
I don't think it was camel urine, but it was something. Anyway.
It makes it better when you call it camel urine because they understand. It's just a stupid idea.
Okay.
Okay, who's on the phone?
Say good morning to Frank.
Frank, thanks for saving me for myself. My radio career may be over, but nevertheless. Anyway, what's up?
Okay, I was lucky that I inherited a 1966 Ford pickup from my uncle.
Okay.
But the truck hasn't been run for probably 15 years.
Okay.
And I'd like to try to get it started, and I kind of don't know where to start from other than I need to put a set of tires on it.
Okay. That's really simple. Get your tires. Go to Discount Tire. Tell them you want something that's going to hold the weight of the truck. They already know that anyway. I don't make a dime on your transaction. I work for the legal department of them oftentimes when they're sued, and I have the ability to say to them, I'd like to be on your side on this because their expectations or what happened isn't true and here's why. Or on the other hand, I say to them, I'd rather be on the other side. So I have that ability. So let's get tires on it. Then you're going to have somebody do an oil change filter, and you're going to have them check all the fluids, the belts, and the hoses. Then you're going to start using it a lot. And as you go along, you're going to... Go ahead.
No, how about like the gas that's in the tank?
Well, it would
be...
Do
I have to worry about that?
If you brought it to most shops, we all have a pump that we're just going to stick down the neck and we're going to suck out all that old fuel you're going to have to pay to have the disposal. And then we're going to put clean fuel in it.
Yeah.
We're going to do a fuel filter. But really and truly, this is like taking a horse out of the barn. Okay, let's make sure that he can poop.
Okay.
Let's take his temperature and let's put a saddle on him. And we're not going to take him out in the pasture and just run him at 90 miles an hour. We're going to generally walk and then we're going to trot and then we're going to lope and then we're going to run. And that's what you're going to do with this truck. There's going to be problems that creep up. A hesitation, that almost always will go away. A misfire, a chug, chug, chug at 52, and it'll almost always go away. So you're going to run into things, but don't bring it back to the shop and say, oh, take care of this chug. No, just keep driving it. Just keep driving it. Most of that stuff will go away. At the end of the day, the worst case scenario is, and not really, at the end of the day, you'll probably want to change all the fluids. Differential, transmission, mm-hmm. cooling system, power steering, brake. You'd probably want to do all of those at one at a time. There's no benefit to doing them, you know, all at the same time. There's no shop discount for something like that. It's four different systems, five different mm-hmm. systems. But to put it back on the road, let's just put it back on the road the way it is. Let's get it dependable where it starts and stops, and then let's start doing everything else. But the tires, I agree with you. Let's do that first.
Okay, so that sounds good. I'll give that. Do you have any recommendation on a 1966 Ford truck that for repairs?
Tell me what part of town you're in.
I'm at Union Hills and 43rd Avenue.
43rd and Union Hills. Who's up there? Well, at Kurtz Automotive, Scott's I-17 in Bell.
Action Auto
at Deer Valley and I-17. Now, let me tell you, Tom at Deer Valley and I-17 at Action Auto, him and I were around when the Scopes first came out in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
And so we understand that old car, and so does Kurt. Mm-hmm. So does Kurt. All three of us were born in that era. So you're getting gray-haired guys that know that car. They can cite the timing specs and the dwell specs and all the specs by heart. So
okay, because that's I'm worried about that some of these shops, that they would look at it and go, I don't know what to do with it.
Well, and I tell people, you can say this, but there's no discount, and Mark Salem doesn't get a kickback. You can say, I hope you like Mark Salem, because he's the one that recommended I See You, and he said you're an old-time guy with gray hair in your ears, and I noticed that you do have gray hair in your ears, and so I'm happy to have you look on my old Ford pickup truck. That's really what you should say.
Do you think he should even start it first with the gas in it, or should he have it towed there? What do you
think? You know, I think I would. Well, he's got all that old gas in there. We got to get that
that's
out.
That's what I mean.
Get that out. Change the filter. Get it started. Get it running. And then you take it to the Circle K. Take your wife to the liquor store. Do whatever you got to do in the neighborhood. Stick close by. Don't have your girlfriend in it just yet. And
you're so bad. Okay, so he shouldn't even start it. He should just have it towed to wherever he's going to.
Unless he's going to pull the gas and do the filter himself and fill it up. Or not fill it up. Five gallons of clean gas. Pull the filter. He's probably going to need a battery. Put the battery in if he can get it running. And then just go drive it. Just go drive it. Now, when I say drive it, I want you know, on a road where you're not doing stop and start. I want sustained speed. I want high RPMs. And if it has a transmission, I want you to kick the transmission. So is it a manual or an automatic, by the way?
Yeah, it's a 3-speed manual.
Okay, so then I want you to start and drive around in second gear. However fast, you know, you don't want to be screaming and stuff like that. But you can drive through the neighborhoods, and you can be on Camelback Road and be in second gear, and you can do 45 miles an hour, somewhere close to that. So you're going to do that. And after you exercise it a while, some of the problems that you have will go away, and some of them you'll write down for Kurtz or for Tom. That's how it works.
Sounds great.
Okay. All righty.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. TOT Black or Kurtz or Action, and I just got to write that down because he'll call and say, "Tell me about what the situation is," and I'll just say Frank had a '66 Ford that hasn't been run in 15 years.
Yeah,
and you know I didn't want to hurt his feelings or anything, but it is a Ford, and if it never starts,
don't hit me
like that.
Oh, <my God.
laughs> he may not ever start again.
Oh, it will.
You know what I mean, Chevrolets, you can start a 39 tomorrow. But Fords, you know, you just never know.
You're crazy.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We talked about Kurtz, but I'll tell you something else. There's one other guy, Larry Harker's Auto.
Oh, yeah.
Larry Harker's Auto has been around since Jesus was a baby. Mm-hmm. Bob there knows everything old and everything new. Mm-hmm. And their nephew, and I don't remember what that young man's name is, but he is one smart cookie. So if you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, Larry Harker's Auto Repair for new cars and old cars alike. You got the best of both worlds. But I need to warn you, though. When you walk in the front door, there's a lady there named Ellen. She's the wife of Bob, who owns the shop. don't try to out-talk cars with her because she's as smart as Bob and the nephew that works there.
Yep.
So yes. you don't want to cross swords with her and start talking to her about oil viscosity and stuff like that because Ellen is a very nice lady, yeah. But she's been around the car business all of her life and she did one time slip. And say, sometimes the guys just come in and pretend I'm just dumber than dumb.
Yep.
And I said, how do you handle that? And she says, with grace.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, good. So anyway, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Mark and Renee here at your service. My wife and I have been business partners for years and years and years, and she probably knows more about cars than most of my buddies do. And symptoms and front counter stuff. Yeah. One of the things that we like people to do is to write their message down on a piece of paper and hand it to us because mm-hmm. that piece of paper goes to the technician.
Yeah.
And the technician has the okay to call the customer for clarification. Mm-hmm. There's not everybody that's going to do that. And we have had in the past a technician in our fold that we didn't want talking to customers.
Sure.
Because maybe he sounded like he was drunk, or maybe he used bad words, or whatever. But the idea is he just wasn't an appropriate person to talk to. But most of us allow technicians to talk to the customer with respect to talking about a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more. Tell me what it does. Does it do it with the air conditioning on or off? I remember not too long ago, a lady came in for a tune-up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the tune-up was, okay, why are we doing a tune-up? Well, it just needs a tune-up. No, tell us why, though. What's it doing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's missing. Okay. Well, it was in the middle of the summertime, I remember. So the technician went out and drove it, and he looked at the controls, and it's on low fan speed, and it's maximum air conditioning. And he's driving along, and the compressor, the car's going like this.
Mm-hmm.
The air conditioning compressor is kicking on and off.
Cycling, yeah.
Because she's freezing the system up because she's got her fan on low and she's on maximum or recirculatory.
Mm-hmm.
So he turns off the air conditioning. The goes away, and he calls her up and talks to her and says, that's not a tune-up.
Mm-hmm.
We can put lots of spark plugs in there, but it's not going to fix anything.
Yeah.
So if you would, when you come in, let me just kind of give you some ideas. We're going to kick the fan speed up to maybe second speed, and we're going to roll the windows down a little bit, and we're not going to ask for big time cold.
Mm-hmm.
And then and if you think it's a miss, then turn off the air and it'll go away, and that'll verify that I'm telling you the truth.
Yeah.
All right, Bob, thanks for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, how's it going? I have a 05 Murano, and I went to the car wash and backed in to dry it off, and I backed into the mat cleaner and shattered the plastic on the rear hatch of my car, which is as thick as two paper plates.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to reskin that, or
on the
is that a very costly
on
fix-up?
On the tailgate?
Tailgate plastic, yeah. All around back, yes.
Is just the plastic bad, or is there metal dented?
Just the plastic.
Okay. No, you can buy the plastic. You can, yeah, any part
you
of...
You can get it reskinned.
Yes. Yeah.
Reskinned.
Okay.
Well, he doesn't know. It's probably glued on.
Okay.
The plastic's probably glued on, and
yeah.
It's probably like a picture frame. It's around the edge of it.
Okay.
And it might actually be attached inside to where you take the inner door panel off the back tailgate,
yeah.
And then you unscrew it and put new plastic on. So the answer is yes. Tell me, please, that you weren't in Tempe when you backed into the rug cleaner.
I think it was called Salem's Garage. Salem's Car Wash.
Are you kidding?
No, I didn't complain to the... No, I'm kidding. I didn't complain to the place because I don't have a backup camera and I wanted to get just a little further back.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, and folks, the reason I'm asking him that is because we own a car wash and we have a rug beater. and he stayed, he said, I backed into the rug beater, and I'm thinking, oh, but that's probably yours.
Yeah.
Well, and we have his phone number anyway because Gil already knows it.
Yeah,
so
right.
We can just send him the bill. But no, this is what I would do if I were you, is I would take a picture of it and send it to a body shop. And just say, can you replace the plastic? And if so, and then give them the VIN number of the vehicle. And just say, I was wondering,
gotcha.
I'm not going to report this to my insurance company because I'm hoping it's less than my deductible, and do that. That's how I would handle it.
Gotcha. Because it's a football size hole, and if someone wanted to reach in and pop the hatch, they could. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To be on the safe side.
All righty.
Okay.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you very much for your help, and happy Easter to everybody.
And you too.
And you too. Thank you very much. It's not very often you get guys that admit that it wasn't. He should have called in and said, my wife backed into the drug meter at the car wash, which is typical.
No.
Yeah, you don't think that
Most
happens all the time?
Most people don't blame it on their wives like you do, so there you go.
That's not true. I've never blamed anything on you.
Yeah,
you've always raised your hand when you did something wrong.
I know, but you let me believe that one day when I drove your truck that I had crashed the side of it and it was really you.
That's true. I did take advantage of you then. Okay, who's the next caller?
Say hello to John.
John, good morning. How can we help you?
Yeah, I was involved in a car accident, and I was wondering if you, and I can't tell, and I was stopped behind this guy and had a foot on the brake. And all of a sudden, you know, it was like my car jumped forward and into the back of him, but my girlfriend was with me, said that she thinks that he backed into me. And it was kind of weird because I had come to a stop, and then all of a sudden, boom, I was into the back of him. So is there a way I can have the computer on the car read to tell whether I was stopped or not?
What year is it? 96?
It's a 2019 Volkswagen.
Okay. Yes, the answer is yes. Did the airbags deploy in your car?
No. I mean, I came to a complete stop before this happened.
All right. Well, there is a very, very good chance that the black box in your car will have captured that as what we call a near deployment. So we need about 17 to 25 mile an hour drop in a blink of an eye, and the computer sees that you're doing, let's just do the math easy for Mark, okay, 15 miles an hour, we're going to use 15. So you're doing 50, and all of a sudden you're at 35. The computer's going to pop the bag right off the bat. It thinks you're in a collision. And so in your particular case, the black box will typically have what we call a near application or a near deployment. But you have to have the right software, and your insurance company actually has the right software. What insurance company do you have?
I'm not sure what she has. Okay. It's my girlfriend's car, and I'm not sure.
All right. Yeah. And the problem is most of the guys that have the software and the gizmos to look at the black box are going to be experts that work for insurance companies and police departments and stuff like that. But most of them are not going to do it for real cheap because you're going to want an analysis of the data, and they're going to have to perform an analysis of the data. But it's going to be a near deployment. Otherwise, the computer was going along, and all of a sudden, it sees that you hit the brakes, and then all of a sudden, there's a bang, and then the computer goes, give me the last 10 seconds. Give me the last 15 seconds. And it'll do that. And it'll show your brake application. It'll show that you hit somehow, and it'll also show if that vehicle pushed you backwards. So there is a very good chance that the information read by a professional would be something that you could do. I would ask the insurance company to get involved, and I would ask them to look at the black box data that you have to see if it supports your contention that you were coming to a stop and he backed into you.
1 minute.
Yeah. Because I'd come to a complete stop.
Okay. It'll show that. It'll show your speed is zero, and then all of a sudden it's going to show you're going backwards. That's what it's going to show.
Okay.
So, if this guy says that you hit him, then and he was really backed into you, then this is probably it could be some kind of ploy, and now he's going to say that his neck and his back is all screwed up, and he'll never have babies for the rest of his life, and you're going to get sued. That's the best thing that could happen to you if what you're telling is the truth, because the truth will come out long before your insurance company writes him a check. All right.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you can give us a call. 602-508-0960. We got 5 lines. Gil answers them all. And he says, hi, would you like to talk to Mark? And you could say no, but I want you to say to Mark that he's an idiot. And he'll say, well, you're number 17 this morning that said that. Nevertheless, we'll be back. Well, folks, I have referrals on my website, marksalem.com, of the best shops in Phoenix, the Phoenix Valley area that I know of. And I know all the owners personally. I have their cell phone numbers. I respect them. And I've been on the radio since 1988 in the Valley. I've been on KKNT since 2011. So that's 12 years. Mm-hmm. And folks, to answer this question, Renee, how many times a year do we have to get involved in a dispute between a radio listener who went to one of our shops?
Zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Maybe one or two or three every 5 years.
Yeah.
That we actively get involved in. But they're just great shops. In Mesa, the only shop we say is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. There's other shops in Mesa. Mm-hmm. But they are really a step ahead, a block ahead, a mile ahead of most everybody else as far as I'm concerned. They've been around since 1970. They're second generations. Both Brian and his wife Thelma are second generation car repair families. Mm-hmm. And as fact, their parents competed against one another because one of them was a Shell guy and one of them was a Union 76 guy. And their parents competed against one another. Then Brian married Thelma and they got their own shop.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in Mesa, then Thompson's Auto Repair, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Jim, you're up next. How are you, Jim? What can we do for you?
Oh, Mark, thank you. I've got a 2003 Chevy Silverado, half ton.
Okay.
It's got the 6,000 engine in it.
Okay.
And if I pull it up in an incline, the oil pressure will go down. It'll start beeping, banging, and doing all, and I have to drop it down to my level area. What is this seems to be the cause of that? Is the oil pump going out?
Well, the very first thing I'd do is I'd add a quart of oil and see if you added a quart of oil, if that would make a difference. The oil pump is mounted on the bottom of the engine block, and then there's a tube, what we have the pickup, and the tube extends into the oil itself. What I hear you saying is that you lose oil pressure when you're on an incline, whether the nose of the truck is up or whether the nose of the truck is down, whether you're going up or you're down, you're losing oil pressure. That would suggest that we're sucking air instead of oil out of the pan. That would suggest that the pickup assembly that goes from the oil pump, and it's a pipe that drops down and then goes horizontal, and it sucks oil, and it's submerged in the oil, it would suggest that something's wrong with that. Worst case scenario, you pull the pan and you replace the oil pump and the pickup assembly together. That would be your worst case scenario. But before you did that, I'd want you to add a quart. I don't care where it's at the dipstick. Add a quart and see if that fixes it. Here's the deal. If we have an air leak and we're sucking air instead of oil, then when you add a quart to it, it'll cover up that air leak, and you'll say, nope, it doesn't happen, Mark, but I'm a quart over full. Well, then I already know that I got to go in there and I replace the pickup. So there is a process to figure this out. Have you ever driven, does the red light come on as well as the oil pressure drops to nothing?
Yeah, I mean, it starts doing all kinds of banging and clanging and the tappets, you know, and that.
Okay.
But the thing is, once it's up to speed, I'm driving level, I drive, it never gets over like 40 or 41 pounds on the meter.
This is like the hose has a hole in it, you know what I mean? And the hole is submerged in the water until you go up a hill, and now the hole is above the level of the oil, and it's sucking air. Remember, the oil pump sucks oil out of the oil pan and sends it to the motor. So you've got something wrong there that would suggest that the pickup assembly, and the fact that on level ground you can drive fast, 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 and everything is fine, would suggest that the oil pump is fine, but it's the pickup tube and the pickup assembly. So the oil pump, let's say the oil pump is 3 inches above the level of the oil, the pickup tube then drops down the three plus another, and so the pickup is submerged in the oil. Well, once you go on an incline, all that oil goes to the back of the pan, and now you're sucking air. So I'm pretty confident the worst case scenario would be pull the pan and replace the oil pickup assembly. But most shops aren't going to let you do that. They're going to want to do the pump at the same time. We're already there. All you have to do is pay for the pump, and I don't want to do this again under warranty. So I want you to do a pump and a pickup and have it as a piece and all together, and we install it, and then you're done. That's what I think that's what you'll run into. Okay?
Very good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Hey, can I ask you one quick question before we go to break?
I got to go to Raphael, but go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We got a couple minutes. That last guy that, not the last guy, but the guy that said he was stopped and then his car either went forward or somebody backed into him, could his brake booster or master cylinder bypassed or something like that caused him to move because his brakes gave way?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. What happens is if you're applying your brake and you're coming to a stop, mm-hmm. and the proportioning valve dislocates is the best thing I can do.
Okay.
Then there's going to be a pop, and there's typically going to be the red brake light will pop on, but people aren't looking at the dashboard under those conditions.
Right.
They're scared to death because they're coming in hot on a stopped car.
Or they had an accident, or they hit, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, that is a possibility.
Okay.
You could duplicate that again,
mm-hmm.
and if you could duplicate it, then that would be it.
Okay.
And he thinks he's stopping, but in fact, there was a neutral there where the brakes went away for a second, whether the booster went bad or the proportioning went bad or the master cylinder went bad and bypassed.
Mm-hmm.
So he thinks he's coming into a stop. It feels like he's coming into a stop. Boom, he hits the car, and he say, well, look, I think the car backed into me. You're right. There is a remote possibility
okay.
that he had a brake failure. But if his brakes for the next 30 days are working perfect
yeah.
and the fluid level is good and the master cylinder is not bypassing, then it's more likely than not that his perception of the whole 5 seconds of hell
mm-hmm.
is that they backed into him. And yeah.
Right,
but
right.
this is the insurance company knows how to handle this.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
going to look at the car. They're going to look to see because those experts, those accident recon guys, they can tell that, wait a minute. That car hit him, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, well, he hit them,
right.
and he rode up on their bumper, and you can see that. So the accident recon guys,
yeah,
they're smart.
They'll figure it out.
All righty, 602-508-0960. Raphael, you stay right there. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. Did I write that down, 115-24?
Yeah, you
yeah, I did, but I sure
space.
Didn't put anything in there, did I?
You're just sitting here twiddling your thumbs.
Yep. Anyway, 602-508-0960. We have four lines open. Raphael's got one of them, and I got 15 minutes worth of show left.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a car question, 602-508-0960. And like we promised Raphael, you have my undivided attention. How can I help you?
Thank you very much. Good morning. Yes, I got a 95 F-150 with a dual tank, and the tank is bleeding into the front tank and then kind of overflowing. I was wondering, I understand the replacing the fuel pump is a fix because that one's bad. Excuse me, that one's bad.
Yeah.
That one's bad. And two, what's your suggestion to do with all that gas? Most of it's pretty bad.
Well, I don't agree with your diagnosis because that's off of Google, and I don't agree. Let me explain. You have two tanks, and you have two fuel pumps, and you have a switch
yes.
that switches back between left tank and right tank or front tank and back tank. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. So if one tank is filling, then the switch is defective because this switch opens the right tank to the motor, or it closes the right tank and opens up the left tank. So the switch itself is one tank is now filling the other tank because the switch is bad. So I know you went to Google, and I know you talked to all those guys on the internet, and I know that everybody's telling you what to do, but I am 99% sure that the switch that's connected to your switch that says left tank, right tank, front tank, back tank, however it says, that switch is telling the switch to switch, and it's one tank's pumping into the other. It's something we've seen a lot of times. So I don't think I would do any repairs from you. What I would do is I would, and there's no reason to think that the tank is bad or the gas inside of it's bad. We all have big tanks and big pumps where you bring your truck into the shop. We just suck all the fuel out of the tank that we need to deal with.
Or we tell them to drive it until it's almost empty and, you know, go from there.
And I bet on your switch that says front tank and back tank or left and right, whatever your switch says, I bet you can stop the one tank from filling the other tank by just figuring out which side of the switch you stick on. That's all. Just stick on one side of the switch. And then drive that until it gets down to a quarter tank and then take it in and have it fixed. We would prefer to have not to deal both tanks full and have 36, 45 gallons of fuel that we've got to store in 55 gallon drums while we fix this. But there is a switch, and when you flip to the left tank, the switch closes the right tank and turns on the pump on the left tank. And then the tank goes forward with the fuel. It does not go into the other saddle tank, and that's what's going on with your truck. Make sense?
Yes, already great. Thank you very much.
All right, you betcha. 602-508-0960, 602, and we have another caller.
Oh,
that
boy.
Fast.
Yeah.
Say hello to Bob.
Bob, good morning.
Morning. Is this the Maha Rusty of car repairs?
Yeah, but you're number one, two, three. You're number four, Bob, so you know what I mean. I'm going to give you my full attention, though. But oh, wait a minute. And we even have a Robert in there, so he's actually the number five, Bob.
Oh, wow.
Anyway,
we're a dime a dozen. I've got a 2015 Ram diesel with a 68 RFE.
Okay.
And it's got 146,000 miles on it. For recommendation, being proactive to the transmission overhaul and make it better.
What part of town are you in?
Northwest. I can take it out, take it in. I can bring it over to you. I could go to Allen. I can go wherever. Pretty capable.
Well,
and so I'm asking, just like, you know, is it worth doing? You know, you know the clutch, this, that, and you know the upgrades of everything, or is it just?
No, there's going to be upgrades because it's what, 6, 7, 8 years old. So we're going to have some upgrades on it.
8 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. Here, let's talk about this. There's lots of options out there. First of all, you can go into a retail transmission overhaul shop. You could do that if that's what you wanted to do. You could also have somebody do an R&R, take it out, send it out, have them rebuild it, and then send it back to the shop and put it in. Salem doesn't do it that way because here's the problem. We send it out, and then we bring it back and put it in. And if there's a glitch, the shop that rebuilt it said it's our fault. And we're saying, okay. How do you know that? Because we don't even know what it is yet. If it's inside,
yeah,
it's your fault, and we're married to it. So what we and a lot of shops do is we do the R&R. We take it out and send it to a rebuilder. And there's about four or five of them here in town. And we use one in specific out of Tempe, and we have them rebuild it. And then while it's gone, we're going to flush the coolers and flush all the lines and stuff. Then we put it back in with a new tranny mount. We start it up and we fill it up with fluid and we deliver it. There's a lot of guys, but geographically, what part of town
it's
are you?
North.
Wait, you
Northwest Phoenix.
Okay, Northwest Phoenix. I would I'd probably call Harker's Auto and ask Bob who he would use on that side of town. I'd also call Billy at 25th Street Auto and ask Billy who he uses. Billy's an old drag racer. He's a great guy, and he's really smart. Both Bob and Billy are smart. And just say to them, Mark Salem said you know somebody in town that could do the take it out, rebuild it, and put it back in for me. Is that something you do?
I'm sure Bob's a better guy.
Well, Bob or Billy, either one of those two. I get it. I got it.
You almost went over your head.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. My wife was laughing before I got it out of my mouth.
Yeah.
So.
And you said, was it a diesel or no?
It's a diesel.
It's
a 68 RFE. Yeah, so anyways. And
Nate,
that's worth,
and
like,
then take it to ATS or not.
What's that?
Nate, and then take it to ATS.
Well, no, but to be honest with you, if you're going to be up there in that northwest town, then I want you to call A&S Transmissions.
Yeah.
A&S. Now, A&S stands for Alger and Shelley, because they're married, or Automatics and Standards.
Yeah.
And he's going to want to do the whole thing. Because I want to tell you something. Alger and there's another kid in town. Those two guys, they are so damn smart about transmissions.
But they don't do retail business, so
you have
to go through a shop.
Alger does.
He does now?
Alger does, yes.
Oh,
Alger
I didn't
does.
Know he did.
Yeah.
Alger, by the way, Alger's tough.
Yeah. So yeah, I would go to Alger and I would tell him that you have a $250 discount coupon. Mark's going to send it to you.
Yeah.
And as soon as you get it, then you'll use it to pay for your transmission.
I'll give them a shot.
Did I ever tell you my Alger story?
I may have heard it. I don't know.
Probably.
Okay, well, probably so. But anyway, I'm going to tell it again.
Okay.
Alger worked for us. He weighed about 110 pounds. His Adam's apple was the biggest thing above his shoulders. He had red hair. He was quiet. And he liked hot rods.
Okay.
And he also had an abnormal great sense of car. So one day he says to me, I'm going to put a manual transmission in my Nova. Can I use this? And we have a two-bay gas station.
Right.
And I said, no, you can't use it on Saturday because we're going to work Saturday. But on Sunday, we don't work. You can do it. But Elger, if that damn Nova's in that bay and it's apart, you are in so much trouble. I'm going to have it towed to the closest cliff and push it off on South Mountain. He says, okay. So he starts Sunday morning. At 11 a.m. Sunday morning, he's laying rubber in front of my house. At 11 a.m. And I look outside, and it's Alger and his damn Nova. And he had already got all the parts, the cross member, the bell housing, the clutches, the linkage. He had already cut a hole in the floor. He already had the boot. He had everything. He even put the clutch pedal underneath the dash. Mm-hmm. And he's out. And so then later, he went into transmission work, and he went through all the old guys that know everything about transmissions. And then he popped out himself as ANS transmission. And Shelly, his wife, is a great person, and she can keep Alger in order. But ANS transmission would be the guy I go. All righty. Thank you very much for allowing me to relive that.
It's all good. Thanks.
All righty. Okay. So five bobs. So we should, like, give them all free oil change, but I can't do that now because it's too late and I need to ask the station for permission.
Yeah, you probably need to ask somebody else, too.
You know, Gil would have to be a part of that giveaway.
Yeah.
Anyway, my email address is mark@marksalem.com. Salem is like the cigarette. mark@marksalem.com. If you're going to send me a question, give me a phone number, because I really don't like to type the rest of my life away. Mm-hmm. So I would just prefer to call you, and I'm going to call you from a blocked line, and I'm going to say, this is Mark Salem. I'm calling you from a blocked line. I'll call you back in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. I need to ask you some questions. Yeah. And then that way you'll know that the next caller in 5 minutes that's blocked is me again. So that's kind of how it works. mark@marksalem.com.
I think you need to stop using the cigarette thing, because I don't even think they make Salem cigarettes anymore.
No kidding.
I don't know, but
I can guarantee you that there are Salem cigarettes
still
in every Circle K in town.
I don't know.
Oh, I don't care whether you know or not. I'm telling you, that's the way it is.
Are you smoking again?
No. That's something I have said since my dad said that.
Well,
Salem likes Salem cigarettes.
I'm telling you.
You don't think that people know? Okay,
no.
We got a few minutes in there. If there's anybody within the age of 10 to 20, when I say Salem like the cigarettes, do you get that? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. So if you're in a 20-year-old, 30-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-old, the question to all of you is...
Well, I think if they're over 50, they might, but
okay.
I don't think so.
How many times do we have to have this conversation?
This is the first one I remember.
No, this is the first public one I remember. I have heard you ask this many, many times.
Okay.
Salem liked a cigarette. Did you understand? How old are you, and do you understand Salem liked the cigarette?
Okay.
Okay, and so, Gil, all we're doing is to vote here. Do you understand that when Mark Salem says Salem like the cigarette, do you understand what he's saying?
Yeah.
And it's going to be overwhelming. This is going to just be terrible for you, because it's going to be 472 people to one, and that's going to be your mother.
Oh, stop. It was in 1950s. I don't know.
It was
okay,
maybe
there is. I don't know. I don't buy cigarettes. I don't know, but I've never seen any.
Okay. Well, it's worked for me all these years.
Yeah.
All these years it's worked for me. Okay. Salem liked the cigarette. And now you want to change the way I am.
Salem liked the witch. You're a witch.
Oh, well, I have done that. And you're not complaining when I say Salem liked the witch, are you?
No.
Okay.
No.
Who we got? Who we got?
Just say hello to John.
John, vote, buddy.
Hey, Mark.
Yes.
I'm on the computer working, and I have you in the background listening to your show. And the computer here, I looked up Salem. It started in 1956 and says Salem remains one of the best-selling menthol brands in the United States.
Seriously? Okay, you're blowing my eardrums out.
Holy mackerel. Can I get an apology?
No. Absolutely not.
This John could be family. I may owe him an oil change for calling in on this one.
Exactly.
You know something, John? What happened is she looked it up on her phone too, and she goes, Salem in 1956, but she didn't continue on.
That's
and
right.
she robbed me of the opportunity, because then you said, and today is one of the top selling menthol cigarettes there is.
I'm
hey, Mark, you want something else? Where she was looking up the Salem, it was actually in bold, that last statement.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Yeah. See there?
Boy, oh boy. I didn't go far enough.
You know what? It just eliminated, my dad did it, my mom did it, and it eliminates but you can say to a young person, and you say Salem like the cigarette, and clearly they don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, hopefully.
But everybody with gray hair understands that if it's Salem.
Well, you got some gray. Well, you don't have much hair, but it's gray what you have.
And what color is yours if it weren't the
color? We've got 1 minute. Let's wish everybody a happy Easter.
You don't want to talk about your hair color,
no,
do you?
I don't.
Okay. All right. Your whiskers are gray.
Oh,
ow, now stop it. Stop it. That's spousal abuse.
It is.
That's spousal abuse.
This could be your
This could be your last radio show.
That's what you say every
and
time.
I want to tell you something.
I'm not scared.
They could walk, the cops could knock at the front door right now and say there's an assault that's happening.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, yes, that's right. She just beamed on me. I'm going to say that.
Okay.
God
right,
almighty,
you do that.
This is your last show.
Okay.
Right, so write it down today. It's the 4/8 of 23 is Renee's last show.
I always try to get out of it, so I'm glad.
Anyway, Mark at MarkSalem.com. And all I say is you're told a lot of stuff about cars in your car, and you have to question whether this benefits them or you. And your manual is the Bible for your car. I don't care who. There's no one is allowed to overrule the manual. It's just the Bible for the car. So your manual wins any argument you have with your husband.